Today's episode of Greenhouse Rants is brought to you by me. Just me. No fucking ads. Nothing. No ads, because I'm not going to endorse some shit I don't believe in. I mean, I'm not saying I don't believe in any of that, but I'm not going to fucking take an ad for some shit I don't own and I don't eat. No way. There's no fucking way all these motherfuckers are eating these snack boxes. I don't have a Casper mat. I have a Purple mattress. The same fucking thing. Comes in the mail. You open it and it explodes. There's no ads. There's never going to be any ads on this. No one wants to endorse this fucking train wreck. So this is Greenhouse Rants. Endorsed by me. Brought to you by me and Joe, who does the intro. And Joe, take it away.
Hello and welcome to Greenhouse Rants, a podcast where Tyler Thrasher sits inside a suffocating glass box, screaming into the void, hoping anyone besides his plants will listen. Enjoy the ambient sounds of nature and the neighborhood lurkers as Tyler dives headfirst into his frustrations with the art community, plant community, and, well, all communities, while also offering somewhat wholesome and educational content. In short, a podcast for angry learners. And now, without further ado, from a man named Joe faking an English accent in the Midwest, your host and personal asshole, Tyler Thrasher.
I have a reprieve from the horror show that Molly and I are watching. For those of you that are into horror, we're currently watching The Haunting at Hill House, The Haunting on Hill House, whatever the word. There's a haunted house on a hill, and every single person warned me that that is one of the most triggering shows that you can find on Netflix. And I underestimated just how triggering that show is. If you're into horror and you have not watched it, it's very good. It's beautiful. It's creepy and it's horrifying in as about of a human of a way as you can be or as you can detail. It's just ripe with human trauma. And God fucking damn it, somehow they found a way to incorporate all traumas. If there's a trauma known to humans, it's in there. Every episode, I'm like, oh, they didn't do that one. Oh, no, there we go. Oh, they didn't do that one. Oh, they did. 8 times in 1 minute. Jesus. Jesus Christ. That show is heavy. We are halfway through, and everyone I know that has watched it before me is like, get buckle in. And they're like, did you get to this part? And I'm like, God, no. God damn it, they're doing that too. It's good. I love horror. I have an affinity for creepy things, as some of you may know. And I don't know, there's something about the feeling of unease, and maybe it's familiar. Maybe it's familiar. Or maybe some of us just don't spend, you know, that feeling of fear, the feeling of like, I don't know, paranormal dread. That's not something a lot of us experience regularly. So it's like one of those exotic emotions or one of those exotic feelings, you know. It's like why I watch cringe compilations. It's not very often you experience something truly cringy. And when you do, it's off-putting, but we all have to admit there's this fascination, this edge of curiosity with cringe, where you don't want to look and you want to close your ears, but at the same time you just want to grit your teeth and bite down on your lip and bear through it just to see how it ends. Maybe it's a mixture of thank God that's not me, or I don't know what it is, but I spend my evenings watching cringe compilations, and they hurt. And same with I just think that need for either cringe or horror, they go hand in hand. It makes you uncomfortable, and that's what it is. That's what it is. That's what I think it is. Okay, tangent time. I think that we maybe like discomfort on our terms. That's the thing. I think discomfort on our terms can frame our lives up, and I think it can build a foundation of what we do and don't want, and it can reflect to us what we do and don't want. Discomfort in uncomfortable situations when you don't have control of them, that's the worst. I mean, there are far fewer things worse than that, than having to navigate an uncomfortable situation when you're not prepared. But when you can set the parameters, hit the play button, and pause it when you want, you get to sort of train your brain. That's what I think it is. I think you're training your brain, and a big part of you is horrified by what you're watching, but then there's another part of your brain that's like, okay, take notes, don't go on stage to tell jokes, don't interrupt somebody, don't go into a haunted house, don't summon a demon in the mirror. There are things that your brain needs those muscles, or lest you join an improv group. So I think that's what it is. I think we seek out uncomfortable situations on our own terms when we can start and end them and call all the shots, so we can work out those parts of our brains that need that little bit of exercise. I don't know. I'm pulling this out of my ass. Who knows? Okay, so Greenhouse Rants. I'm going to start this off with some listener mail. I don't know what to call this. I get absurd emails. Usually I have my assistant put them in a folder, either called Tyler's Cult emails, or sometimes I just pretend like I don't get them because I do not know how to respond to some of the emails and messages I get. And this is one that I just could not ignore, and I have set aside specifically for an episode of Greenhouse Rants. And here it is. And then after this, I want to talk about a very fascinating color that I learned about that's more of a psychological color more than anything. Okay, so this email is from Delphi. Dear Tyler, I'm in love with two boys, and I don't know which one to marry. First, there's Andy. He's very handsome and sells and insurance. I don't know if he sells insurance or if he sells something mysterious and has insurance. Mother likes him, which helps a lot. He's very reliable and seems anxious to get married. Then there's Tony. He's dark and sort of gives me the creeps, but they're awfully nice creeps. I don't know which one I like best. In the daytime, I like Andy. But I think I like Tony better at night. Which one do you think would make the best husband? Andy or Tony? Your friend, Delphi. Okay, look. I'm just trying to live my fucking life. I don't know why I got this. Okay, Delphi, listen up. If I'm going to be real with you, here's the thing. I've never heard of awfully good creeps. I didn't even know that was a concept until I read this email. If this is a true concept to you and you feel comfortable and you're just being funny, you know, and you're being humorous, that's fine. Good. That's okay. I get that. Now, if you're legitimately creeped out and there's a party that feels endangered, and then maybe there's a self-destructive edge that wants to indulge that, I'm obviously going to tell you to stray away from that. If Tony, who's, I don't know who's who anymore. Is Tony the dark one? Tony the dark and sort of gives me the creeps. Yeah, I would probably stray away from Tony. And I should not say the phrase is Tony the dark one. That's going to come back and bite me in the ass. I would maybe stray away from Tony. But here's the thing, too. Here's the thing. Andy may have a little bit of dark in him. I don't know. You know, just because Andy's better during the day doesn't mean a few things. I don't know what to tell you. Maybe both. I don't know. Tony, yeah, maybe Tony is a fucking night prowler. He's a nocturnal freak. Sure, he may be a completely decent human during the day. And your mom may like him. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe introduce Tony and Andy. I don't know. I don't know what your plans are. Anything can work. I'm not giving you relationship advice at all. If there's some sort of freaky freak shit that Andy can't satisfy that is absolutely necessary, I don't know. Maybe don't box yourself into an unhappy relationship. It kind of sounds like either of these two are not fully satisfying what you're looking for. I can't believe I'm actually legitimately indulging this. Andy sounds like he offers stability. That's good. We all need stability. Every human needs to know a solid foundation. But it also sounds like he doesn't satisfy this hunger that Tony seems to bring to you on a dark, velvety platter. Sure. But it also sounds like Tony is not reliable. I feel like I know some Tonys. You should find you somebody, a human, who can satisfy both. Or don't find you a human. No one said you had to find a single human and say, this is what I'm going to do till I die. So if you're looking for... if you're looking for a single individual to satisfy you and to provide you with comfort and company for the rest of your days, I would say go get coffee with Andy, have some good conversations, cartwheel over to Tony's at night, and then just fucking live your life and wait till you find somebody that can you can have some brunch and coffee with and then fucking go lock the door with afterward. There are people that can be both if that's what you need. But it sounds like either of these humans offer two separate things you need, but none of them together. That's what I'm saying. Your friend, Tyler. Oh, God. Or just live your fucking life. I don't care. I don't even know if you're going to listen to this. Okay. So there's that listener mail. And if you have listener mail, if you want to send me shit and you need some reassurance or advice, fine. Send it to me. I'll entertain it. Okay. So I wanted to start a series where I talk about fascinating colors. As an artist and a scientist, they sort of go hand in hand. I mean, the concept of colors depends on the material we're talking about, and the definition of color isn't really a concrete thing, is it? And this is an example that I think sort of twists what we think about color, and that color can also be an experience. It's a response to an experience, or it could just be a human trying to describe a phenomenon through stimulus. So there's a color, I want to say color, and I'm not going to pronounce it right, so I'm going to say the fucking word and then I'm going to spell it. I'm just going to stop. E-I-G-E-N-G-R-A-U. And I found this color because I was trying to describe what I see when I close my eyes really, really tight. I always did this as a kid. I would squeeze my eyelids shut. When I would open them, there'd be this hazy field. I also see colors when I close my eyes. And sometimes when you're looking at light with your eyes closed, you can kind of see a soft, muted pink or red. I at least see that. And I was trying to describe to somebody how I can see colors when my eyes are closed. And they're like, bullshit. And I'm like, no, it's a thing. I'm literally looking at a field of color. And this color that I just described is the dark, fuzzy gray color that you see in the absence of light. So say in a dark, 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 dark room, you're not seeing pitch black. You're seeing really close to that, but it's this indiscernible field of gray. Or when you close your eyes and there's no light, that isn't necessarily black. You can discern black. This is like this gray, but it's really hard to pinpoint because there's nothing to contrast with it. When we're looking at colors, you know, even in a completely white room, you can discern white because there's still a source of light that can break up different colors based on shading and different objects that may be in the room. But to look at a color field, a pure color field that's just as is, it would be hard to discern a color completely when there's nothing to compare it to. So this is a very complex color, and it's a specific gray that you see in the absence of light, or say when you close your eyes really tight, or whenever you go, when I go caving and I go to the furthest chamber that I can get to and I shut all the lights off, that dark field is not necessarily black. My eyes are trying really hard to pull light, to pull any sort of information, and that makes this dark gray field known as I gangrew. Fucking, I don't know. I hit the button to have this motherfucker say it to me, to pronounce it, and I don't think they did a good enough job. So that's what I have. I spelled it for you. Fucking look it up. It's fascinating. I think it's fascinating, and it, to me, goes to show that colors are not just a box of crayons, but colors can be a response. It can be the brain trying to fill in information, right? That's kind of how I view color, especially coming from somebody who, I'm working towards synthesizing opals. And the whole concept of an opal is that it's not necessarily colorful. It doesn't necessarily have color, but that the light going through the opal is broken into its separate wavelengths. And that's your eye's visual response to that light being broken up into different wavelengths is what makes color. And then there's that structural color, how a material interacts with light. And then there's pigments, and it goes on and on. But the concept of color simply being like a dye or a pigment that you can separate out, that's a very simplified way to view color. And so hopefully I can sort of spread the fascination of color through this and find more colors that aren't necessarily a blanket color, but maybe an experience or the brain, which all color is literally the brain trying to decipher information and how particles interact with one another. Neuron processes, like it's just your brain trying to make sense of the world around you. And so we get color. But I think we've done a disservice by simplifying color. I think it's far more fascinating than that alone. And that reminds me, while I'm ranting, I had a friend pose a question to me, and a question that is deeply bothering me. I shared it in my newsletter this month, deeply, deeply bothering me. I was sitting there visiting with them, and they said, "So I thought of a problem." I said, "What's your problem?" And they said, "So any food, it has to be food, any food object, any food item that doesn't go good with chocolate goes good with ranch." And I said, "What the fuck did you just say?" And they said, "Any food that doesn't go good with chocolate goes good with ranch." I said, "Again, why the fuck did you just say that?" And they said, "And vice versa." I said, "So if it doesn't go good with ranch, it goes good with chocolate?" She said, "Yes, that is what I said." And I said, "So the problem is that there's not a food item that goes bad with both, that all food items belong to one or two of these." And I said, "Bullshit." I yelled, "Bullshit." I looked at my wife and I said, "Bullshit." She said, "Name one." So I went through the fucking list. I don't know how much of this episode is going to be dedicated to me breaking this down. I said, "French fries." Okay, fuck no. French fries go good with both. They go good with ranch. And if you haven't dipped a French fry in a chocolate milkshake, you're fucked. I said, "Fucking citrus. Citrus is horrible. Citrus with chocolate sounds disgusting." She said, "Depends on the citrus." I said, "I've had orange chocolate. Okay. I've had grapefruit chocolate. Okay." And I said, "But lemons and limes." And then I remembered that the most slapping an ass fucking ranch I've ever had had lemon and lime zest in it. And it fucked me up. It fucked me up. So good. So I went through other things. I said, "Mashed potatoes." "No, I've had mashed potatoes with a dry ranch seasoned packaging mixed in. You will not have better mashed potatoes." I said, "Sweet potato fries." Fucking Red fucking Robin's yummin' head ass literally brings you sweet potato fries with a bucket of ranch. I've had it. It was fine. It wasn't amazing. It was fine. I went through this shit for a long, 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 long time. A long time. I don't even know all the food items I listed. I just went through so many. Bananas, fucking chocolate. bananas with ranch, horrible. And an image that I will get out of my head immediately. But bananas with chocolate, fucking slapping. Oh my God, I went through so many things and I found a couple of answers, but I had to work really hard to get those answers. And it upsets me how many things we would dip in ranch and not really question. And how many things we would dip in chocolate and just fucking do the thing with. It bothered me immensely. And so here are my answers. Here are my answers. One, the ranch can be dehydrated and the chocolate can be dehydrated. So you can have the dry ranch seasoning packet, which will convert anything into just a mouth parade. And then, you know, dehydrated chocolate, cocoa powder, same fucking thing. So Sour Patch Kids, arguably not food. A Sour Patch Kid covered in chocolate makes me mad. A Sour Patch Kid dipped in ranch makes me a little more mad. What else do we think of? Molly said curry. I said, yes, but I have specifically had curry fries. I've had curry fries with a side of ranch. It was fine. And then Molly said, what about orange chicken? And I said, yeah, I want to say orange chicken and rice don't go good with either, but I've had orange chicken flavored buffalo wings dipped in ranch. That was fine. Yes, it's a little bit of a stretch, but it's orange marmalade chicken. Is it that much of a stretch? And so the answer we came up with was pho. But then I said, I don't know, because what I'm saying is blasphemous. I get this. I'm not advocating for anything that comes out of my mouth. I'm not saying that these things should exist. I'm saying that they can, and there are people who, who will not question that these things exist. I said, yes, you put jalapenos in lime juice. I've had that. Would I question it if someone's like, I made some crazy pho? And I said, what the fuck's crazy? And they said, I put the jalapenos and the limes, and I mixed in a little bit of dry ranch seasoning pack. I'd be like, I would try it, and it honestly might be good. I'm from the Midwest. I'm, again, not advocating for this. I'm saying that I know that I probably wouldn't immediately throw up. And then someone said right here, potato chips. Yeah, you would think either way. Chocolate covered potato chips, salty potato chips covered in chocolate, far better than you would ever expect. So good. So the best thing we'd come up with was Asian food. Maybe shouldn't touch either of those. Sushi with chocolate, like authentic sushi. Oh, sushi with ranch. Ugh. But also, I'm from the Midwest. Wouldn't be surprised if I walked into some fucking place and they said, we put ranch on the sushi. I'm like, okay, fuck you. So there are a couple of things. Not many. The problem isn't that there are zero answers. The problem is that there are almost a near infinite number of things that would go with either. And that bothered me. So much so that this was like 2 weeks ago, and Molly and I every now and then will be like, I thought of it, and then we'll say it, and then the other person's like, nope, I've had that with chocolate, and I've had that with ranch. So that's a problem, and I don't like that they did this to me. And more than that, I just feel so deeply for them that they have carried this question alone for many, many years, and I've now shared this with you. I am sharing the burden of this with all of you. Oh my God. Yeah, man, fuck me up, dude. Ugh. If you think of anything, message me. That's fine. The amount of people in this chat right now that I think may be having an existential crisis. Especially if you're from the Midwest, man. Ranch on everything. And there are places I love traveling to visit. Like during my pop-ups and stuff, you know, I love going to Portland, but every time we go to Portland, they don't have my Midwest staples. Some places, but I'll go to a pizza place in Portland, like, can I get ranch? And they're like, excuse me? I'm like, I didn't fucking stutter. Do you have ranch? I am not eating this fucking pizza unless I can dip it in the magic white sauce. Or I'll go somewhere and they'll have tortilla chips. They'll have chips and salsa. I'm like, you got queso? And they're like, what's queso? And I'm like, what's what? And what's queso? Bowl of liquid gold that I consume way too much of. What do you mean, what's queso? Or you go places and they give you what they think queso is. I'm like, that's not queso. And then I go back to Oklahoma and I have what I think queso is. And I'm like, oh, we're fucked. We either drizzle everything in chocolate, cheese, or ranch. And then someone the other day was like, where are you from? I was like, what do you mean, where am I from? You got this twang. I don't think I have a twang. And then I get going and I sound like I have a fucking twang. It's just so many parts of my life I got used to that are just not okay. I mean, maybe my twang's not that not okay, but I am from Oklahoma. But then I think about how many things I would dip in ranch. And then I think, what is ranch? And I have never questioned what is ranch. I just eat it. It's not okay how quickly I accepted something as a permanent and powerful staple in my life. And I don't think, with as curious as I am about the world around me, I don't think I've ever stopped and asked, what is ranch? And I just made an existential multi-layered cake for myself to eat tonight, covered in chocolate. Someone said in the chat, fried cheese curds and ranch, yum. I'm going to tell you something that I think is better than fried cheese curds and ranch. We went to, what's the place with all the cheese? Wisconsin. Wisconsin. Wyoming's got the everything else. It's got, I don't know why in my head, I know better. And I still get Wisconsin and Wyoming shuffled around in my head. Wisconsin. We went there like 2 years ago and there was this restaurant and they had cheese curds. But their cheese curds came with raspberry sauce. I thought, that's fucked up. I want the ranch. And the waiter said, literally, no. This is not going to happen. I'm bringing you the raspberry sauce. You're going to eat it, and it's going to change your fucking soul. They brought me a thing of cheese curds with raspberry sauce. And I dipped the fried cheese in like what was essentially raspberry jam. I don't think I can go back. It's one of those combinations. It's just one of those combinations you have to try. You have to try. It fucked me up. I told him, I was like, this should not be this good. But yet it is. So if you get fried cheese curds and you have some raspberry jam, heat it up a little bit. I'm just saying, don't knock until you try it. Don't knock until you try it. Oh, man. Oh, man. So what else is happening? I released a sport hunting guide. And what's funny is I've only been talking about variegated sports for like a couple of years, ever since I shared my sport, variegated sport Monstera. And it started to fascinate me that so many other people are fascinated by variegated plants. It was kind of like this world I was living in by myself. And I grew up with variegated plants. I was surrounded by them. My dad was a landscaper and he taught me about variegation at a very young age. You know, as I would help him in the garden, he would talk about all of his hostas and his ornamental shrubs. And he'd be like, this one's, you know, variegated. This is variegation, yada, yada. And it's just kind of been ingrained in me to appreciate plants with this mutation. And I have people all the time send me messages. Is this variegation? Is this a sport? And I can't keep up with all the messages. So I said, I'm going to put together a fucking guide. I'm going to put together a guide, put it on my site, and hopefully this will help some people. And I listed it for $5. And then, I don't know, I just said, fuck it, after like 2 weeks. And I was like, it's free. Because it's just really hard to grapple with the plant market right now. You know, I had a lot of qualms early on. A lot of qualms because it just kind of blew up out of nowhere. You know, you would see a variegated Monstera for maybe $60. And at that point, you thought, wow, this is a lot of money for a plant. And now, if you see a variegated Monstera for $450, it's a fucking steal. And I was like, this is ridiculous. And there's still parts of me that think this. And then I just noticed that so many people were not fazed by this. So many people weren't fazed by this. And they even turned it into a thing, like a fucking collector's thing. And I thought, okay, yes, they are fascinating. And I kept seeing a lot of people who wanted a variegated Monstera, but not everyone's going to be able to dish out hundreds or thousands of dollars for one of them, especially in the middle of a pandemic. And so I just set my ego down. I was like, I'm not going to change anyone's mind. If people are going to spend this on the plants they want, that's what's going to happen. The least that we can do as growers is share the resources we have. And so I put together this guide, and it's on my website. It's called Tyler Thrasher's Sport Hunting Guide. And it is all the steps I use to find and track down variegated plants and sport mutations when I'm out plant shopping. And I've put together a step-by-step walkthrough on how you can do this. And seriously enough, funny enough, the day I released it, I had a few hundred downloads immediately, and people downloaded it. Is the mic still working? I need to stop talking with my hands. I just fucking punted the microphone. Oh, God, I need sleep. I talk with my hands a lot, and my setup right now is my mic on a Lowe's 5-gallon bucket lid on a plant stand. So very precarious. I can't get it together. The world's ending. I'm doing my best. Fuck it. So I put together this guide, and people downloaded it and put it on their phones, and they went out plant shopping. And that day, I had dozens of people message me and say, I found one. Even people who had sports in their collections and just simply did not know what to look for. And when they looked closer, and in my guide, I even say, you know, there are tiny blemishes and mutations that pop up and disappear pretty rapidly. Chances are, if you look at your collection close enough, you will find something just sitting amongst your plants. And I think since then, I can't keep up. I've had a few hundred messages from people who have found variegated Monstera, different kinds, and different kinds of variegated plants, and some very, very stunning sports. Like, so stunning, I messaged them immediately, and I was like, look, I'm not trying to be a vulture, but if you propagate that shit and you ever sell a cutting, keep me in mind. Like, that is something I want to showcase in my future conservatory, you know? And these treasures are just sitting there. That's what fascinates me. So I'm thinking, if there are people out there that want to dish out thousands of dollars for these plants, and they don't want to go out and look for them themselves, they just want someone to make them an offer, or offer them a plant with this mutation, then fuck, what if we got as many people out there hunting for these plants, and who knows what they'll find? Who knows what they'll find? I mean, someone may stumble upon, like I've always said, a black Monstera, or a plant that has higher levels of anthocyanins. You know, someone might stumble onto something that is just sitting there waiting to be appreciated. And there are people out there that could fucking use a win like that, you know? If the plant market's going to just do what the plant market does, and there's no amount of ranting and complaining and moaning on my end that will do anything, then we might as well arm as many people as possible with these plants, you know? That's what I think. You know, someone could stumble onto a plant that they can propagate and then sell, and someone will pay them fucking $6,000 to $7,000 for it, and it could change their life. And so that's kind of my thinking, is the plant market's just going to go wild at the moment, then let's help each other out, and let's help out as many people as possible, and people who are very curious, have keen eyes, and could use a fucking win like that. You know, they could stumble onto an award-winning, just absolutely mesmerizing, mind-bending plant. I could use that. That's awesome. So that was my intention with the guide, and kind of why I said, you know what, even it is $5. It took me months to work on. It is $5. I sold enough copies to make it worth my time. And I was like, fuck it, make it free. And the second I did that, the second I made it free, again, hundreds of people messaged me their Home Depot sports that they found, their Walmart sports, their Lowe's sports, the sport sitting in their grandma's fucking kitchen. Like, once you just give people the resources and share that information, it can go so much further. And that's how I sort of feel about this whole thing, is the gatekeeping tendency that seems to happen in the science community and the plant community. Imagine if we could just share that knowledge openly, it could better the quality of the field for everybody. And by doing this, someone might have the info to all of a sudden go, that's a black monstera, or, you know, that's a, you know, a pink or orange plant, or, oh, that plant looks different. That plant looks really different. And they could discover the next horticultural fucking treasure trove. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see what happens. And I already have a list of people that have sent me the sports they found. And I'm like, that at some point in the future, I would love to have that in the conservatory. So that's kind of my thinking with that, you know, and that's just how it is. So if you want the sport hunting guide, it is free. It's on my site. You can download it and share it along. Let's share it along and let's see what we find. And if you find something really cool, feel free to message me. I get endless DMs, so I check them as I can. If I don't respond, don't take it personally. But if I do happen to see it and I respond, I'll let you know if you found something cool or not. So yeah. I don't know, crazy plant time, which also makes me want to transition to the future of my plants and kind of my short-term, semi-short-term goals. Keep talking about this fucking conservatory. I want a conservatory that's open to the public, that is next to, near, or possibly above my lab. I don't know. I kind of speak preemptively about things, but I do make them fucking happen. I'll give myself that. I'm looking at relocating my lab here in Tulsa. I need a bigger building. After this last summer, when I've been shipping nonstop, I don't even have a lab anymore. It's just a packing and shipping facility, which is a huge blessing, but that just showed me that I have to grow with my business. So I'm looking at getting a larger lab, and ideally start work on the conservatory. And there's a possibility that the conservatory will be on top of the building. I've never thought about this. I've always pictured the conservatory in these big, lush, rich botanic gardens and ponds and fountains. That's what I think about. That's what you think about when you think about a conservatory, is the gardens, the themed gardens, the trails, the fountains. And I started thinking about managing all that, and I was, no, that's too much. But what if I had a super sexy conservatory on the roof? I don't know. I thought about it, and it would dissuade people from stealing plants, because that was also my concern. And it's a valid concern that if I have a conservatory, will people steal plants? Yes, probably. I don't think there's a single conservatory in the world that hasn't fallen victim to greedy or stray fingers. So I was always worried about that, especially when a few people in the plant community had been called out for bragging about stealing from conservatories. But if it's on the roof, you can't really steal. I mean, if there's only a couple of ways out and I turn around and I see someone walking with a big plant under their arms, walking past my lab, you can't do anything. So that's what I was thinking. That's the plan. I'm going to try my best to make it happen and have somewhere where people can visit my lab, see my work in person, because that's killing me, honestly, is... And all my artist friends out there probably feel what I'm feeling, which is to make art and make work. And sharing it online can be a privilege, but it's not the same. It's not the same for me to share something and then read all the comments and nice words. It's nice, but at some point it starts to feel disassociative. It starts to feel sort of like foggy and intangible. And I'm really missing making work, showing people in person, and hearing their responses, and talking to them in person about my work. And someone in the chat said, "Who is talking about microchips and vaccines? That's not a thing." I don't know. I'm not reading the chat right now, but yeah, I don't know. I have family and friends that buy into all the conspiracies and, you know, fucking end times microchip shit. And I'm sorry, but no one hears worth microchipping. I'm not, you're not, no one is interesting enough to microchip. That's, we have phones for that and cameras on every block. And what are you gonna do? You know, they show us ads and we buy things. Like, we're all the things you would do with the microchip, we already do. So anyways, I want a place where people can come see my lab, look at some cool science and look at my projects. I can talk to people about science and art. And then I say, "Hey, why don't you go upstairs?" And they go up on the roof and it's just a fuck ton of plants. You know, I'm picturing like a tropical house and then a dry house. So I have a place where all my variegated monstera can take over, and then have one that's all succulents and drought tolerant plants with zero scaping and all that good stuff. And then even have a building that's just the plants I've made and hybridized. And that is something I think a lot of people don't know to appreciate, is that plants largely are kind of a canvas. In habitat, they serve very distinct purposes. But once you take them out of habitat and you put them in your home, hopefully you don't do those two steps back to back. But once they're taken out of habitat by, you know, some white explorer, and then they're brought back, commercialized for decades, and then put back into the market and in your home, then they don't serve that distinct purpose, and then they kind of just exist as something to toy with. So then you can make hybrids intentionally. And I always tell people, I'm like, "Yeah, I made this plant." And they go, "You did what?" And I'm like, "I made this plant." And they're like, "What?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you just wait till two of them are flowering, and then you make them fuck." And I was like, "That's it." And they're like, "What?" I was like, that's how you do it. You know, it's nothing super crazy. And I just don't think that's appreciated enough. And I know there's some purists out there, and I've talked to some horticulturists and botanists friends that are like, "Oh, we fucking hate hybrids." I'm like, "What? Why? That's the stupid fucking thing to say." And they're like, "Yeah, they're just muddled mixes between two." I was like, "That's the point." And there's a lot of scientists that kind of poo-poo hybrids because they think it like fucks up the taxonomy and it fucks up the classification and the data. I'm like, no, it doesn't. You literally just keep your fucking data and then have a side note that says, "And if you put these two together, it makes this." Like, that's just extra data. What do you mean? So to me, any information we get, any new bit of information is vital, important, and exciting. So I'm all for hybrids. I'm all for cultivars. If the plants can do this, then we should document it. It's not like we're making something that breaks the universe. We're just working with the tools in the universe. And if it's possible in the universe, we should see it and document it. It's still science. So yeah, it doesn't have an impact on the habitat, but it's pretty fucking cool that you can take two separate plants, two separate species, sometimes two separate genera, and slap them together and make something crazy, even if it's sterile and can't reproduce. I think it's cool. So I want to spread that fascination. So that's the plan. That's the plan, people. And hopefully we can start it soon. And part of that is I have a couple of things coming up that I want to share, upcoming projects that are going to help this vision come true. And then I will have a place where people can come visit and see all the things that inspire me and give me life in one location. I mentioned in the last episode, I think, I don't remember, time means nothing right now, that DFTBA is about to take over my fulfillment, which is awesome. I don't have the capacity to ship and package anymore, and I haven't made art in a long time because of that. So it's like this blessing and this curse. But I had this fulfillment company reach out and say, look, we want to help you out. I was like, please, God, I'll take it. So they're going to take over. On top of that means that there'll be regularly stocked merch. So like t-shirts, journals, pins, all of that. And I don't have to rely on pre-orders and buying a bunch of it at once and then saying, this is all I have for now. There will be a warehouse that just keeps it constantly in stock, which is awesome for everybody. And a part of that is I'm going to start a pin subscription. A botanical pin subscription called Botanica. And I'm hoping that that will launch late April. That's kind of the goal. And the idea is that with the monthly subscription, that money will go toward funding the conservatory and helping literally build it. And another portion of the profits from that subscription will go toward funding Tulsa artists. I've found myself immensely disappointed and underwhelmed by some of the arts organizations in Tulsa. Not all of them, but some of them. And just kind of how Tulsa treats its artists. And there's just this big fucking chasm that I'm like, okay, no amount of rich white people in this city are going to do art right. I've watched, and everyone in Tulsa, we've watched the fucking white billionaires and the rich white millionaires try to fund the arts, and it's just done so poorly. They don't get it. They don't get art, and it's really just like a back patting self-congratulatory circle jerk. It's always done tacky and clinical and boring. And there's been instances where people have used that art to criticize the billionaires and the philanthropists in Tulsa, and they get silenced. And so yes, when rich people fund the arts, it always comes with parameters and boundaries. And if there's anything that goes against art in the nature of art, it is parameters and boundaries. So it doesn't make much sense for a bunch of rich people to say we love to fund the arts. Kind of. We like to fund the arts to a point. That's not how that works. You know, you don't get to fund an artist and then say shut up when they criticize where you got your money or how you came into your money. That's not how art works. So no, rich people cannot fund the arts appropriately and let it exist in its fullest. It makes them uncomfortable because art will almost always come back and address the rich, right? you just don't get to be rich in that realm and not have art come say some shit about you. And you need to listen. So I cherish the idea of using my art to share the love and have artists help artists, because artists get artists, and I want to see Tulsa artists treated a little better. So that's what it is. Oh, someone in the chat said, don't use the N word. I'm not even going to scroll up. So so confused. But yeah, I want to see artists help artists, because we get it. So that's the plan, is the pin subscription will fund the conservatory and it will fund Tulsa artists. And I don't know what opportunities that will look like. we did a lot of like exciting fundraising stuff last year. Now, how I don't really have anything laid out this year, really, but that's kind of what that's going to kind of be my focus, is using my resources and platform to help other Tulsa artists and spread the love and try to like uplift the Tulsa art scene as much as I'm capable from my corner of the world. So that's kind of where I'm at with the Do Good Gang shit and all the Do Good stuff. I don't know what this year will look like. It's kind of weird to picture the world again. It feels like the pandemic's ending. It's getting close, you know, knock on wood, but vaccination rates are going up. I just got my second shot. Everyone I know is getting vaccinated. I don't know. It's kind of hard to say, but I feel hopeful. And so what does that look like? I don't know. I have no idea. What do the efforts of using art to fundraise and give back, what does that look like in real life? Not just on social media, not just online. What does that look like for me? And, you know, this whole thing that has kind of been started, the Do Good Gang, I don't know what that looks like in real life. I don't know what that looks like when we travel for pop-ups or when I'm out engaging in the real world. I just don't know what that looks like. And I'm excited to see what that turns into. But I don't know. So this is kind of me brain dumping. Other things coming up. Let's see. If you're coming through Tulsa, I've taken over the LTO market. It's an empty storefront, and that they rotate artists and rotate small businesses, and they get to fill the space. And they've given me 2 months, so I'm there till the end of May, and I'm gonna be filling it. I have filled it with my crystallized work, my plant journals. What else? I've filled it with. I'm going to be filling it with plants throughout May. So the first month is my science and artwork, and then the second month is going to be plants. So if you're coming through Tulsa, I urge you to stop by. If you're a Patreon supporter, I urge you to stop by. And if you are a Patreon supporter, I will give you a free copy of my journal and signed. And I also have my Garden of the Ghosts installation at Philbrook. The Philbrook Art Museum. So if you're coming through Tulsa and you want to see some of my shit, I got two places where it's bumping and grinding. And if you're a Patreon supporter and you do come through, please let me know. And I can get you a signed book. We could get some coffee, talk plants, rant. I don't care. Lots and lots of exciting things. Someone said, be right back booking my ticket. Other things before I wrap this up. The Variegated Onion Project is going great. Uprising Seeds had a variegated onion come up in their batch of onions, and I freaked out because it was stunning, and they sent me the seeds from the plant, and about 25% of them come up variegated, and I sowed like 100 of them, and so I have a couple dozen variegated onions coming up. So I'm going to separate those, and I'm going to cross-pollinate them to hopefully get 100% variegated seed, or it's never going to be 100%, but close to it. Hopefully we can stabilize this trait and offer a whole new lineage of onion, and I don't even know if the onion itself is variegated. I know I said that last time, and I won't know for a few months, but it'd be pretty dope. There's variegated bananas, I've seen variegated berries, I've seen variegated bananas, variegated pineapple. So is it possible that the onion itself could be variegated? Yeah, it could be possible. If it is, I'm going to freak the fuck out. So send good vibes. Hopefully I can solidify, not hopefully, I'm going to cross the variegated onions together and make a whole new lineage there. And it's awesome that Uprising Seeds trusted me with that. I think I'm doing a good enough job. Someone said I got variegated mangoes. That's fucking crazy. That's awesome. So yeah, that's that on the botanical front. And, I chopped all my variegated Monstera. Literally all of them. I chopped them to bits. each one is its own separate cutting. I went crazy, and I turned 12 of my variegated Monstera into around 36 of them. And so I'm serious about this conservatory and having a variegated Monstera room. And I'm trying to isolate the traits out and see what sticks, what doesn't. So I'm excited by that prospect. And there are so many people asking me for cuttings. Look, I do pranks every now and then where I hide them and disguise them in joke eBay listings. And some people find them and get them. But I'm also auctioning a few of them off to raise funds for the conservatory. So if you're a collector and you want one of mine, you may see an auction on one of the various Facebook plant groups. I don't ever say where it's going to be. It's just kind of like a surprise, like a spontaneous thing. And if you see a silly eBay listing in the future, or something that seems a little fishy and funny, it's probably fishy and funny. But that's also on the horizon. Hopefully using this variegated Monstera to fund the conservatory. I'm very serious about this shit, guys. I'm going to make it happen. I'm going to fucking make it happen. So with that, I'm going to end this episode. I hope you're fascinated by the things I've said. And I hope I didn't say anything outrageous or enraging. So I hope you're not angry. You don't have any reason to be. I'm kidding. You're completely valid in how you feel. And I think I don't know if I'm going to edit out me slapping the microphone, but... Oh, God. I'm going to pour a glass of wine and watch the most traumatizing horror show that's offered. Oh, if you have any horror suggestions, send them my way. I love good creepy shit. Nothing gory. I don't like Saw and Hostel shit. I don't like watching people being torn limb from limb. I don't like that. But you got some creepy paranormal sort of like, oh, man, this is just human shit disguised as demon shit. I like that kind of shit. So with that, I hope you all have a good night, good time, good life. And take care of yourselves, take care of your brains, and stay curious.